gay Catholic, LGBT Catholic, celebrating LGBT families, quote unquote, in the Catholic Church. Now, is this celebrating diversity or is it celebrating sin? Let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And welcome back to another episode of the Council of Trent. Today, we're going to talk about a hot button issue. Surprise, surprise. If you know me, you know that I like talking about issues where there can be heated debate, where there's passion on both sides. And that's fine. It's important to talk about these kinds of issues because these are the issues where there's a lot at stake. And so we shouldn't stay away from them. But when we enter into them, we have to make sure we keep a clear head. And you can have emotions about these issues, but we control those emotions. They don't control us. They should guide us toward the truth, but they shouldn't, you know, just be horses that are let out to run amok. They pull the carriage of truth towards its final destination. In case you're wondering, I have a whole book of analogies and metaphors for arriving at the truth. I'm just kidding. So let's jump right into this issue, as I teased a little bit earlier. You'll hear a lot of people nowadays in media, people trying to be progressive in their view of the Catholic Church, and they'll talk about how you can be a gay Catholic, how you can be an LGBT Catholic, or how maybe Catholic universities will have clubs that reach out to LGBT people and bringing them into the church. And we're told that this is tolerant, this is diverse, this is kind of the language that we should be using. And there's really two kinds of people that use this sort of language. There's people that are outright dissenters against church teaching, and there are people who are more, it's kind of ambiguous where they're coming from. I mean, there's some people who will, and you see this in all kinds of ministries. If you look on college campuses, if you look in certain larger cities, you'll find these Catholic ministry, LGBT Catholic ministry, and they outright say the church is just wrong when it comes to its teachings on homosexuality. They see nothing wrong with homosexuality, nothing wrong with same-sex marriage, and they believe in a whole host of other issues too. You know, they believe in women priests, they believe in abortion and contraception. They might deny that Christ is truly present in the Eucharist. So this is something, and I've seen this too also with groups that support women's ordination, that they want to have the name Catholic and say, well, we're gay Catholics, we're just like everybody else in the church, but we want to celebrate this particular population. Yet you're not really like everyone else because you also deny all of these other teachings when your feet are put to the fire and you're asked about them. So it's like Jesus said in the Gospels that a good tree bears good fruit, a bad tree bears bad fruit. So when you celebrate certain things that should not be celebrated, and you try to identify them as being good, I think the real motivations start to come out. So there's people who will have an identity of being a gay Catholic who believe that homosexual behavior is completely fine. Then there are other people who are a bit more ambiguous. I mean, sometimes they'll say, obviously, this behavior is wrong, homosexual behavior is immoral, or it contradicts natural law. But they'll say we should still identify people and not say that they don't exist. We should still welcome, you can be a gay Catholic who is chaste, for example, who practices chastity, yet your identity is a gay Catholic or an LGBT Catholic. And we should still reach out to this community and use this label, even if we believe or they believe that this kind of behavior is still wrong. That is the more interesting group that I want to look at today and talk to you about and say, regardless of whatever group you fall into, should we use these terms? You know, should I say these are my gay Catholic friends, or this is the LGBT Catholic ministry that we take part in? A few points on that for you to walk through when this issue comes up. Number one, I think the most important point when this comes up is this: we should put the person first and the attraction second. People should not be defined or locked in some kind of a box by their sexual attractions or sexual orientation, their sexual identity, male or female, or what their particular identity claim may be. So, you know, that would be the T in LGBT, transgender Catholic. I think that it's a big mistake when we put these identity labels first in front of the person and let them be what defines the person. Because number one, gay Catholic, LGBT, for a lot of people, those don't just mean an attraction, which in and of itself isn't sinful. You know, just having an attraction is not a sin. But for many people, the term LGBT also includes support for behaviors that flow from these attractions. So the fact that you have to do so much qualifying, making so many qualifications, saying, well, I'm an LGBT Catholic or I'm a gay Catholic, but I don't believe that homosexual behavior is appropriate, I think that should be a clue that this is not the kind of label you want to adopt for yourself or a label that we adopt for defining other people. If there's a magisterial document that I would point you to on this issue that I think clears things up really well, it was written back in 1986 from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. It was a letter to the bishops of the Catholic Church on the pastoral care of homosexual persons. Now, obviously, that's not necessarily a term that I would use, homosexual person, because I believe we should put the person first. But you see that term homosexual persons in church documents, sometimes for simplicity, for brevity. But what the document does say, what this letter from the CDF does say, lines up with what I'm saying here, which is the person should come first, the attraction second, and specifically, the person should not be reduced merely to the attractions they have. This is what the CDF says in this 1986 letter. The human person, made in the image and likeness of God, can hardly be adequately described by a reductionist reference to his or her sexual orientation. Everyone living on the face of the earth has personal problems and difficulties, but challenges to growth, strengths, talents, and gifts as well. Today, the church provides a badly needed context for the care of a human person when she refuses to consider the person as a, quote, heterosexual or a, quote, homosexual, and insists that every person has a fundamental identity, the creature of God, and by grace, his child and heir to eternal life. So another point I would add to that is, so we put the attraction is second, the person is first. That's why when I talk about this issue, I'll talk about not, you know, gay Catholics, for example, or gay people or homosexual or heterosexual. I'll say people with opposite sex attractions, or people with same sex attractions, or people who have sexual identity disorders, people who identify as transgender. So not transgender people, not gay people, not LGBT Catholics, but people or Catholics with same sex attraction, people or Catholics with transgender identity. And that keeps the person first. Number two, the second point would be this, that we should not reduce the person and we should not celebrate a privation of the good. So if there's something where there's an absence of good, something that's created suffering or evil of any kind, we should celebrate things that are good, not privations or the absence of good. And I will give you an example. A lot of times people who have disabilities won't say that they are a blind person, or here's a good example. They won't say, you don't say special needs children. Commonly, if there's a child who has some kind of physical or mental handicap, you don't say special needs child, it's child with special needs. So number one, you put the person first, and whatever the hindrance or disability may be comes second. And I think it should be the same with identifying as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, whatever it may be. These things are not something to celebrate. The person who has these attractions should be celebrated because every person is made in the image and likeness of God. But these things themselves, the Catechism itself in paragraph 2357 says that attractions to the same sex, those attractions are intrinsically disordered. So they are nothing to celebrate. We should not celebrate the absence of properly ordered attractions. We should celebrate people, but not these attractions. And so when I describe them, I'd say these are people with or who suffer from these various attractions or perhaps an identity disorder. And finally, it's important to remember that when people use this language, I referenced this earlier, LGBT Catholic, for example, a lot of times it means people who think this behavior or these sins aren't really sins. And so when we use this language, we are buying into this kind of paradigm, giving support to this paradigm of people who are dissenting against church teaching, and it can be confusing for people. So this is what that 1986 letter, the letter to the bishops of the church on homosexual persons from the CDF, says about that. The movement within the church, which takes the form of pressure groups of various names and sizes, attempts to give the impression that it represents all homosexual persons who are Catholics. So my aside, you know, you'll see these different quote unquote ministries that talk about they represent gay Catholics and they try to represent everybody with same-sex attraction, but they're a special interest group. They've got their own unique take. They don't represent everybody. And here's what the letter goes on to say. As a matter of fact, its membership is by and large restricted to those who either ignore the teaching of the church or seek somehow to undermine it. It brings together under the aegis of Catholicism homosexual persons who have no intention of abandoning their homosexual behavior. One tactic used is to protest that any and all criticism of or reservations about homosexual people, their activity and lifestyle, are simply diverse forms of unjust discrimination. And that was back in 1986, and not much has changed a little over 30 years later, that any kind of criticism of using the terms homosexual, criticisms of this behavior is disordered, is hate, is discrimination. It's not even allowed. Because for me, really the only group that talks about same-sex attraction that I know of that is faithful to the teachings of the church is the Courage Apostolate. And you can see their website online, Courage. And what's amazing to me that Courage helps people with same-sex attraction live chaste lives. They help them to practice chastity without reducing a person to the identity of being gay, lesbian, or whatever that may be. Whereas I see lots of ministries out there, people who are celebrating Mass with altars draped with rainbow flags, saying that they're a gay minister, you know, gay Catholic ministry, but they fall under what this paragraph from the CDF letter is describing. People who abandon church teaching or ignore it, they're a pressure group, they try to represent everybody who has same-sex attraction, and people who say, well, I have same-sex attraction, but I want to live chastely, they don't belong anymore. They're self-hating. They don't belong to this group. And so that's really a problem. And we've seen this a lot, this idea that the church should be more open to using terms like gay Catholic or LGBT Catholic from people who follow Father James Martin. And Father James Martin, in his book, Building a Bridge, he talks about this. The book is, the full title is Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. There are some points of merit in the book. I read the book. There are points of merit there. And I'm not going to be a harsh, cruel critic of the book or hurl insults at Father Martin like other people have, because nobody likes insults, and he has certain words on that. We'll discuss that another time. But I want to point out this element of the book where Father Martin says that it's wrong for people like me or for the church to not use the terms gay Catholic or LGBT Catholic. So let me play you a clip. This is him talking about the book at Villanova University, and he's praising the university because they have a group, I think it's called Oasis, and it's a safe space, quote unquote, for people who identify as LGBT or gay or lesbian or what have you. And he says the church should have outreach to the LGBT community and name it. Like, every diocese should have a gay Catholic ministry, LGBT Catholic ministry. So here's what he says.
Examples for dioceses and parishes include also celebrating masses with LGBT groups, sponsoring diocesan and parish outreach programs, and helping LGBT Catholics feel like they are part of the church, because they are, and helping them feel welcomed and loved. Now, some Catholics object to this, which is sort of putting it mildly. Type in James Martin and LGBT and just see what comes up. And they say that any outreach implies a tacit agreement with everything that anyone in the LGBT community ever says or does.
Well, it certainly says that you think that the terms are acceptable, and the terms, for most people, they see those terms as an endorsement of a behavior, not merely the identity of someone with certain attractions that they may choose to not act on. So I still think that is a fair point.
But that is an unfair objection, because it is raised with no other group in the church. If a diocese sponsors or a parish sponsors an outreach program, for example, to Catholic business leaders, no one says that the church has sort of sanctified everything that every business person has ever done. I think I'm going to do this.
Okay, here's what's wrong with that analogy. So, to say that you have Catholic business groups or outreach to African-American Catholics, for example, or Hispanic Catholics. You know, people say, we have all these different identity groups to reach out to. What about Catholic business leaders? There's some bad businesses. We're not endorsing every business. Here's the problem. The concept of business, different racial identities like African-American or Hispanic, these are morally neutral. Business, to follow Father Martin's analogy, business itself, the concept of taking money and providing goods and services, that in itself is morally neutral. So you can have Catholic business leaders. And hey, if people come to the Catholic business meeting and they represent an immoral business, we may say that you can't be a part of this association as long as you engage in this business. So the better analogy would be, well, should we have a Catholic pornographers meeting? You know, should we have Catholic reach out to Catholic owners of strip clubs and invite them to our diocese and have meetings and celebrate their contributions? Going back to the privation of the good analogy I gave earlier, should we have groups that celebrate alcoholic Catholics? No, we don't want to celebrate a privation of the good. We want to celebrate the person and help them work through whatever suffering they may be enduring because of an absence of a good or a kind of disorder that they have. So the analogy between LGBT Catholics and Catholic business leaders, it'd be more like trying to reach out to Catholic pornographers, really, or Catholic polygamists. Maybe there are Catholics who embrace polygamy and say, well, we're polyamorous Catholics, we're polygamous Catholics. Why don't you reach out to us? Well, we do want to reach out to you. We want to reach out to you if you identify as an LGBT Catholic. Whoever you may be, the church wants you to find a home here. But here's the thing, to be at home in the church is to receive God's grace, to be known as a child of God, to draw closer to Jesus Christ, and more importantly, the closer we get to God, the more we should want to abandon any sins that keep us from Him. That's what we should be doing. And so if we make an essential part of someone's identity, an essential part of who they are, is an attraction, and especially the idea of acting on an attraction that is sinful, if that's who you are, then that is incompatible with the mission of leading someone closer to God. It simply is. So we should certainly have ministries like what Courage offers for people with same-sex attractions to help them live out chastity and find joy in our Lord, but not reduce them to their sexual identity. And that's what we should be doing. And when we talk to other people, when this issue comes up, once again, let's try to use our language with appropriate care. We should speak with sensitivity. We should speak with compassion. And if you're ever not sure what to say, just follow the rule of putting the person first and not celebrating a privation of the good. So the person always matters. They have opposite sex attraction, same sex attraction, because there's all kinds of disordered attractions. The goal is to lead people closer to God through the grace of the sacraments so that our attractions can cease being disordered and be ordered towards the good and the ultimate highest good, God Himself, the only thing that will satisfy us for all eternity. Something to think about. I'm really glad you listened to the episode today. Keep listening this week. We'll have a special bonus interview from Daniel Mattson, who wrote the book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, and he's an excellent witness to how we should identify people with various attractions. So thanks a lot for listening, and God bless.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.